Hey everybody, Buck Ballew here, and as a recent customer of Jim Ellis Automotive and a longtime friend of the Vice President, Stacy Ellis, man, I know Jim Ellis Automotive Group takes pride in being a family-owned and operated business. I saw it firsthand. When Stacy's granddad, Jim Ellis, founded the company back in 71, his goal was to treat every customer like family by offering a car buying experience that was both easy and fully transparent. And it worked. 50 years later, Stacy's dad, Jimmy Ellis, grew the organization to become Georgia's largest family-owned and operated automotive group. And today, third-generation family members like Stacy, along with more than 1,700 dedicated team members, are working hard to uphold the values Jim Ellis Automotive was founded on. And that's why Jim Ellis has been around for over 50 years. Enjoy the advantages of buying your next vehicle from a family-owned and operated dealership. Visit JimEllis.com or stop by any of their 20 dealerships located throughout Metro Atlanta. Jim Ellis Automotive, where you can always expect the best.
All right, we're happy to have the head coach of the Georgia Bulldogs, Kirby Smart, with us as he joins us on the Loud Security Systems Newsmaker Line. Coach, we appreciate the time. How are you doing?
Doing great, Matt. Everything's great. Y'all good?
We are all good on our end. I haven't had a chance to talk to you since the end of the season, so let me go back for 1 second. How would you describe, Kirby, your level of exhaustion at the end of last season, given all the extra things you had to deal with compared to just any other season when you're all said and done?
I don't know. Exhaustion might not be the right word. It was very different because we didn't have recruiting. You know, we didn't have official visits tied in. So a lot of our energy is spent on campus, going out, seeing kids. And, you know, usually we go do that during that month of December when we have that early signing period. So we had the early signing period. We just didn't have the going out physically to the homes and home visits and official visit weekends, which is sad for those kids that go through recruiting, but it didn't tax us quite as much as coaches. So there were some hurdles, you know, with COVID, and our staff did a great job. Our medical staff did a great job protecting our players. And that the frustration I had was just with the loss of games, rescheduling of games, and you couldn't control a lot of things.
Well, you said you couldn't control it, so how much were you on pins and needles, not wanting to see the phone ring or not wanting to hear a text early in the morning? How much did that weigh on your nerves?
Well, it was just not a lot you could do about it, you know. So you kept the question, and do I prepare for this team or do I just get my team better? You know, do you work on each other and not worry about opponents, because it can all change so quickly that you missed an opportunity to work on yourself getting better in fundamentals when you're working on an opponent that you may not play.
So I'm going to use the word normalcy. Maybe it doesn't apply here, but how much does a level of normalcy for you having a spring practice, a full spring practice, and a spring game to look forward to matter to your team in preparation?
Oh, it's great for the young players. You know, we got so many guys that haven't played in a spring, haven't played at all. So when you have that, you want a chance to get them to grow and get better, and that's really what we're focusing on the spring is just trying to get every guy on the team in a position to be able to help the team. And we've got some returning guys that played a lot, but we also got some young guys that we think can help us.
Kirby Smart, head coach of the Dogs, with Chuck and Chernoff on the Fan. So how tangible was it, do you think, not having a spring practice a year ago to what happened during the year?
You know, I don't know. I think it was different for every player. I mean, there were certain players on our team that probably could have gone without a spring because they had played so much. And then there were others that it just the new offensive coordinator, new, you know, some of the new terminology, and then with the quarterback position in flux for us, it was tough. You know, if we'd had a spring without Jake or without our starting quarterback, it's different than not having one.
So let's follow up on that then, because we always hear about competition at every position and coaches want that. Is there a true competition for the quarterback position going in to both spring and into the season, or is this JT's job?
Well, it's JT's job. He's played the position. He's really on top of it. He's doing a good job in our offense, but it's not to say that we're not giving the other guys a look. I mean, Stetson Bennett is a good football player, and we think he's very athletic. He creates a different dynamic. Carson Beck is a guy we've always thought a lot of. He's a really good passer, and, you know, he didn't get the benefit of a spring practice. He didn't get the benefit of doing anything in college football, that now he's getting a ton of reps, and I think that's big. And then Brock is here with us, and he's very athletic, and he's done some good things. So every guy is going to have an opportunity to play across our roster. But JT is a guy that's proven himself, and we hope he continues to do so. And he brings about the kind of best assets we have in our offense, which are some of the wideouts and some of the skill position guys. We've got to be able to use his strengths to get them the ball.
What is your expectation year one to year two now for Todd Monken and the offense having the full offseason, JT having a full offseason, not rehabbing, like all those things put together? What kind of jump do you expect?
Well, I think the biggest thing is just growth, and you know, the expectation for me is always get the most out of the players. I think the expectation for everybody else is different, and they try to put a tangible number on that and say what that is, but for me it's really simple. I want to get the most out of what we have. I want to be able to exhaust all our abilities, and I think a lot of the focus has been put on the skill players, and a lot of times you can't do things if you don't have the right guys in the right positions across the front, across the offensive line, and defensively. And so we got to do a lot of things around some of our skill players to be able to accentuate their positives.
Now, it's funny the way you put that, and you're right, because like the rest of us, the fans, the media, I'm like, this is an offense that should be scoring 40 points a game moving forward. When you hear the outside world say stuff like that, what's your reaction?
I think it's all circumstance. I mean, you could say that. They could say we didn't play our best defenses down the stretch. You know, the teams we played were not as good defensively as maybe some of the teams we played earlier. And I also think that we're going to get better. I think we've got a good nucleus returning, but a lot of that's going to be based on being unselfish. And in today's day and age, that's important that you sell that as much as anything. And then, you know, we're not as across the board, we're not the same offensive line that we've been in terms of experience. So we have to be able to improve in that area. We got to be able to protect the quarterback. That's one thing that I always felt like Jake had that not everybody had. He had a really elite offensive line in front of him in terms of guys that are playing in the NFL. All five of those guys will end up having played in the NFL. And now that's not a total rebuild, but we've got a lot of rebuild in the offensive line, which some of the best things we do offensively off play action are going to come off being able to run the ball and pass pro. We've got to be able to do that.
Kirby Smart, head coach of the Dogs with Chuck and Chernoff on the Fan. So compared to year one, how much more of Todd Monken's playbook is available now to the offense?
I don't know. I think people want to make a lot about that, and your playbook is limited to the players in it. And you say, well, JT's back. JT's, you know, that's great, but our limitations aren't surrounded around JT. They're around the other players within the offense. You know, that starts with the back. It starts with the offensive line, tight ends. We'll have some young guys playing out there at tight end and then also at wide out. So we probably have the highest percentage of returning offense back that I can ever remember in terms of skill players, but that is not a direct correlation between success. A lot of that's going to come from, you know, defense creating turnovers, getting the ball back, and offensively not turning it over. So there's a lot of things that go into that, but I know that we're ahead of where we were last year, and that's something that we can hang our hat on and continue to grow and use JT's strengths.
Well, so the one thing you just said there is the returning amount of starters, and it looks good with, you know, wide receivers, the tight end, the backs. And this is probably the wrong word, so I'll use it anyway. Do you worry about making sure everybody gets their touches and, quote, keeps everybody happy?
I worry about winning, you know, and what comes from winning is using the personnel we have the right way. And players can't let the ego and the selfishness become part of it. Obviously, as coaches, we want everybody to have success, but the best way to have individual success is through team success. And we preach that. We live it. We've seen it here with Sony and Nick and some good wideouts that played with those guys, with Miko and Riley and Javon Williams. The best success you can have is team success. And we got a lot of players that are talented, that it's hard to share the ball enough. But if they all look within and say what's best for the team is to win, they'll all have their opportunity to play at the next level regardless of statistics.
Kirby, you said it's Todd Monken's offense, which, I mean, he's the OC, he's got the keys to it. Is it total autonomy? Like, how involved is the head coach during the week and during the game and what's happening with the offensive side of the ball?
As much as I need to be. I mean, for me, I spend more of my time on defense, and it's really always been that way for me. I don't spend a lot of time deciding what's in and what's not in. I know, that's what you pay those guys to do. That's what you pay the offensive coordinator to do. So, if anything, for me, it's usually giving a nugget about the opponent's defense and trying to figure out which ways we can get the balls in our playmakers' hands, and that's always been the case. Not any different with Monken.
So do you, and this is kind of a funny thing, we play a little cut of you on our show, having a little back and forth with Chip on the Georgia way, which we got a kick out of. But do you get frustrated or do you laugh at the notion that Kirby's too involved in the offense? He wants to run the ball too much. He's not letting his OCs air it out the way college football is today. Do you have either reaction to those?
I don't even see that, to be honest with you. I mean, I don't really pay attention to it or notice it, and just try to do what's best for our kids and our players. And that's scoring points, and that's the number one objective, is to be able to do that. So I don't pay much attention outside that.
All right, let me get you a quick question philosophically on offense, because we know the game works in cycles. Some years it's big offense, other years defense. Right now we're in this big cycle of offense. Do you think this is one of those things that in the next few years kind of slows down, or is this just the way the recruiting is going, more talent offensively, the rules favor the offense? Is this going to be what we look at in college football for a while?
I think it's just football in general. I mean, if you look across the board in high schools, teams are throwing the ball more and more successful, not necessarily winning championships, but, you know, good high school football can be won, you know, running the ball, doing different things. Where you look at the pro football game, and it's a pass league. It's a pass first league, and it's a score points league. You look across the board at the teams that are winning the most, playing for Super Bowls. It's not that they can't run it. They can run it. They have the ability to score quickly, and they're dangerous, and they're threatening. And then college football is the same way. You look at the quick score, quick strike, a lot of ability out of the skill positions. I think that's a common theme across college football. To say where it's going, that's hard for me to control. I do know where it is right now, and everybody's trying to keep up with that. You know, you're trying to defend it on our side of the defense, and then with our offense has done a tremendous job of recruiting and getting the people the kind of puzzle pieces that will allow us to try to be successful throwing it.
Is there a part of your team, a unit that's keeping up later at night or waking you up earlier thinking we have to do this on the offensive line, replace this on the secondary? Like, which of the units has you a little bit more concerned?
Well, I worry about all of them, you know, because from a health standpoint and just the kids in this day and age, you know, you don't have complete control of them, especially during COVID. We don't get to be with our players as much as we typically are. And, you know, I'm hopeful that each one of them stays healthy. We don't have any major injuries, and that we're able to get those guys through a great off-season workouts. But, you know, we have positions that were younger or more inexperienced. Those are obvious. I mean, it's not hard to look and see where you lost players when you look at the pro day we had and you look at the upcoming draft. But there's always somebody there. It's how fast and how quickly can we implement that person and get them ready to play. And that's our job as coaches.
Well, Coach, good luck the rest of the spring. Health and everything moving forward. We appreciate you spending time with us, and we'll talk to you down the road.
Appreciate it, man. Thank you, guys, and go Dogs.
Hey, everybody. Buck Blue here, and as a recent customer of Jim Ellis Automotive and a longtime friend of the Vice President, Stacy Ellis, man, I know Jim Ellis Automotive Group takes pride in being a family-owned and operated business. I saw it firsthand. When Stacy's granddad, Jim Ellis, founded the company back in 71, his goal was to treat every customer like family by offering a car-buying experience that was both easy and fully transparent. And it worked. 50 years later, Stacy's dad, Jimmy Ellis, grew the organization to become Georgia's largest family-owned and operated automotive group. And today, third-generation family members like Stacy, along with more than 1,700 dedicated team members, are working hard to uphold the values Jim Ellis Automotive was founded on. And that's why Jim Ellis has been around for over 50 years. Enjoy the advantages of buying your next vehicle from a family-owned and operated dealership. Visit JimEllis.com or stop by any of their 20 dealerships located throughout Metro Atlanta. Jim Ellis Automotive, where you can always expect the best.
The winningest team in baseball also has the most saves, and people who save the most money are winners. So start earning saves by investing in Worthy bonds for only $10 each. These bonds earn a fixed 7% APY, and there's no fees, penalties, or minimum balance required, and they can be redeemed whenever you like. You can even round up everyday purchases to buy additional bonds. Go to worthybonds.com/save. That's worthybonds.com/save. And save and win.